Okay, so this morning you guys are in for a great treat. We got a little bit of a glimpse of this presentation on Leadership Day, and it's amazing. How many of you met Mr. Zig Ziglar? Anybody in the room? Yeah. And what I said on Leadership Day was that sometimes when you have a really famous father and they leave a massive, powerful legacy, those are some pretty hard shoes to fill. But when you've got your own legacy and you get to combine that with a powerful and positive legacy that your dad, you don't have to fill somebody's shoes. You just use your own footprints. And that's exactly what my friend Tom does. So Tom, right after Howard's done adding whatever he thinks I left out,
Well, of course, I could write a whole book. Not that you left out, but just how much this man means to me. I just happened to be up here. I was gonna let Sherry do the whole thing, but you know. So Tom is my brother. He is my friend. It has been an incredible journey, and what an honor it has been to travel the world with him, representing that great name, and to mentor his one and only daughter. I mean, that has just got to be the utmost of a privilege, and we're so proud of her. And just got married this year. I got to speak at the wedding, got to be there, and it was just better than phenomenal. So I'm proud of Tom and excited about this new book, this new work. Everybody loved it day before yesterday. So please welcome to the stage my friend, Mr. Tom Ziglar.
Everybody in Zoom land, hello! I'm just going to talk like this because this is all I know how to do now. All right, so we got two cameras. You can take it if you like.
Michael.
Well, Howard, Sherry, I'll tell you what. There's nothing like home cooking. There's nothing like being amongst family and friends and people you care about and love, and it's been too long. How many of you noticed some changes over the last year? Did anybody? Yeah,
right, yeah.
Is that you? Notice some changes?
A couple dozen.
Wow. Sherry, I just wanted to say something about what you said about following in Dad's footsteps. After Dad passed away, one of my friends came to me. His name is Clifton Jolly. And we were talking, and he said, how are you doing, right? And so when you lose somebody you love, your friends, your family, they come to you, they say, how are you doing? And I said, you know, I'm doing pretty good. And he goes, well, how are you really doing? And I said, well, it's kind of heavy, right? And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, this legacy, this is like a treasure. And he looked at me and he said, Tom, he said, you don't have to worry about that. Your dad's legacy is secure. There's nothing you can do to screw it up. You have to worry about your legacy. And so when we're entrusted with a lot, we get this head start, right? We get this advantage. We get all these things. But that really was a turning point for me. We get what we get from our family, from our past, and we don't have a lot of choices in that, but we have a choice of what we can do today, how we can build our legacy. And so, Sherry, that just brought that conversation back with Clifton Jolly. One of the things that changed, and I'm just gonna share a couple of stories that have happened to me in the last year, since it's been so long. My daughter got married. January 2nd. It was kind of cool. Very small group. We were nervous like everybody is in a time like that. And, and all the wedding stress. And we knew that they were going to get married, and they'd been dating quite some time. And so when Zach, my son-in-law, came to ask me for my daughter's hand in marriage, he had been on a job hunt because he knew that if he didn't have a job, the answer was not going to be the one he was hoping for. Can you dads relate to that? So he gets this job and he comes in and it's a remote job. So it's a new world of remote work, and he gets this job and he comes in, and I spent three, when they come for that meeting, okay, dads, you got to milk this. Okay. You've got to use it for all it's worth. So for 3.5 hours, I had my questions lined up. And these were great questions because I asked him about money, I asked him about his relationship with God, I asked him about what was really important to him. All of these things that we need to get out on the table right away. And, of course, I already knew a lot of it, but I wanted to see what it was with the pressure on. Have you noticed that people will act differently under pressure? Yeah, so he's sitting there and the sweat's there and he's answering these questions, and then we just get into the relationship. And so then I asked a question that I've been preparing for quite some time, and I said, Zach, can you support a family? And of course he got the big chest because he'd just gotten his job and all that. He said, yes sir, I can. And I said, Zach, that's really good, because including Alexander, there's three of us. So that was fun. So there, in timing, you know, Bob Bodine says that time is your enemy, but timing is your friend. Timing's everything. And so when Alexander and Zach were looking, they knew they were going to buy a house. They were both savers. They'd both been working for 4 years, and they were going to buy a house together. And so right after the pandemic started, they went and put money down on a house to hold it. And by the time they moved in with the real estate market, they had like over 20% equity by the time they moved into this house. Isn't it crazy times? Wow, it just blows me away. And then there's the rabbit, okay? How many of you have Zoom cameras? Raise your hand, I will see. How many of you have been addicted to the Zoom camera? I'm sorry, not the Zoom camera, the Ring camera. How many of you have the Ring or a security camera? You've got one? Anybody get addicted to it? Yeah, your husband. So we're watching the Ring camera, and these rabbits will hop by. And so one day my wife says, we should put a carrot out there. So we put a carrot out there, and the next morning we go out and it's gone, and there's nothing on the Ring camera. So we did it again. Nothing's on the Ring camera. Carrot's gone. Five times, the ghost rabbit got the carrot without getting on the camera. Well, then we learned where to put the carrot, you know, I think the rabbit started getting just really familiar with the, and he would start eating it right there on the camera. And then he would come to the door and the carrot wouldn't be there, and he would wait, just sit there. And we would bring the camera and he wouldn't run. He doesn't run. So now at about 6:15 in the morning, we hear the little knock on the door. Okay, but it's not all paradise and rabbit land. So a few months ago, about 10:55 at night, a bobcat walks across the screen of the camera. And then 10 minutes later, it walks back and sits on our front porch and starts grooming itself. So does anybody know what cats do after they eat? They groom themselves. So I send the video to my sister Cindy, and she goes, that cat probably ate the rabbit. So I go out there, and sure enough, there's bunny carnage in the bushes. And then there's a note next to it saying that they were thankful for the sweet carrot-tasting rabbits that are really fat and slow. So, but then the rabbits came back. So Chachas, my wife, is convinced it wasn't our bunny, it was a visiting bunny that didn't know any better. So everything's good. I'm just saying that there's a lot of disruption that's been going on. Y'all agree? Okay, so let's get into it today. I turned in a manuscript about 6 or 7 weeks ago for this book, 10 Leadership Virtues for Disruptive Times. And the book, it kind of formed this way. When I did the deal with Nelson, I had to do a 2-book deal, which is kind of cool. And I was supposed to have this manuscript turned in 1.5 years ago, but they delayed it. And then the pandemic started. And then the whole focus of the book changed. So starting in about April, I started digging into everything that's changed in business and in life. Because if there's disruption and challenge and change, I want to be ready for it. Y'all agree? And then this thing started setting in, and as I started reading and listening and doing all this research, this is what I came to realize. The disruption we've faced in the last year is nothing compared to the disruption we're going to face in the next 5 years. How many of you are excited about that? Anybody here excited about that? I tell you what, on the surface, it's kind of scary. But underneath it, what does disruption create? Opportunity. It's exactly right. We are in an opportunity-filled time. And so we're going to go through some different things, and we're going to talk about this philosophy that says you can have everything in life you want if you'll just help enough other people get what they want. Did you know that in a time of disruption, challenge, and change, this philosophy is even more important than it's ever been? Because you are surrounded with people and friends and family and coworkers and vendors and clients and customers and everybody out there, and they're struggling, right? They're trying to make sense of what's going on in the world. And if you're out there to figure out how to help solve their problem, then, oh my goodness, opportunity is your oyster, right? Opportunity is right where you want it to be. And all of these books, 45 books that have come out with this philosophy, the core philosophy is more important than it's ever been. Because there's something that doesn't change. And that's the human heart, right? The need for connection, the need for relationships, the need for family, the need to know that somebody cares about me. And then the information that's everywhere. Our podcast is continuing to grow, over 51 million downloads now. That's a lot. We were talking about legacy earlier, and I think, what's the point of all this? What's the point of this race? How many of you, either you had this conversation with yourself or you know people who had this conversation, they went home during the pandemic and they said, I don't know why I'm on the gerbil wheel. I don't know why I've been doing what I've always been doing. Anybody have that conversation? It's just the reality. I was talking with my friend Brian, who's here today, and he travels a lot and speaks, and he's like, you know what? I don't like getting on airplanes anymore. And I'm like, you know what? Howard told me the same thing, right?
Be on that beach.
Be on the beach. Have people come to you. But people started putting their priorities in a different order because of this. And so when I see that picture of Dad, that's his 80th birthday party. And I'm not going to tell the story I usually tell. But I just want you to look at where he is in his life. He's got this. Now, what did he face? He faced the Great Depression. He faced World War II. All the crises between, you know, all that. Lost a daughter, right? Disruption, challenge, and change. And yet, and he's 80 years old. And that face is just this humble gratefulness. Right? Do you see that? Do you see that gratitude? There's a level of satisfaction, but there's something else that's going on there to me, and that is he's got this countenance that says, God, man, if you take me today, I'm okay. If you give me 20 more years, I'm okay. Because he had intentionally done everything he knew to do to create legacy in those he loved. In other words, he took God's principles, ideas, concepts, all those things, and he passed it on. And so millions of people over the last year have come home and said, you know what? It's not about the next paycheck. It's not about doing what I've always done, right? It's not about chasing and measuring myself against other people. It's about something bigger than that. And so one of the opportunities that we have and that you're going to see as we go through this is that people are more ready than ever to hear the truth. They're ready to do something that's meaningful. How many of you have a mission in your business? Hopefully everybody raised your hand. Otherwise, I'm going to have to get on Howard.
MVP, write it down.
Right. You have a mission. What's your why in your business? Are the people who come to work with you, are they locked into the why? Right? Do they know why you do what you do? Which reminds me of the casket. How many of you were expecting a picture of a casket? The power of the pause. So about 20 years ago, we get a call from a prospect, and they say, hey, we sell caskets. And we need some help because our sales team, you know, they're out and they're calling on these independently owned funeral homes in small towns, and they're having a hard time selling caskets. We need some help. People are dying every day and they're not getting in our casket. We need some help. So we fly out there, myself and Mike and Morgan, we go in there in Brooklyn, New York. Okay, I'm going to set the scene because this is an amazing scene. We go into Brooklyn, New York, and it's part of town. We're a little bit uncomfortable, right, of the situation. And their headquarters is in a four-story brownstone. It's like 30 feet wide and super tall, right? It's one of those skinny buildings. And we pull up, and they tell us, they say, look, the fourth floor, which is really the third floor above ground because they have a basement, the fourth floor, that's where the great-grandmother lives. She's still alive. She and her husband, they founded the business like 70 years earlier. So this is family-owned business. Anybody here got a family-owned business? Yeah. Family business. So, and then the second floor is the offices. The first floor is like a showroom where you can buy the little stuff, and then or they can display it. And then down in the basement is where they have the casket display. So we walk in, they greet us, they're real excited. We're having the meeting in the basement, that's where our conference room table is. And we go down, and this family was Italian, and there were eight large Italian men dressed for a funeral sitting at that table. So Michael and I look at each other, and they're like, sit down. Then we look around. We're surrounded by caskets with eight large Italian men dressed in black. And one of them says, hey, come in the room over here. We want to show you something. And Michael's from New Jersey, so he puts his New Jersey voice on. He goes, hey, time out. Is it safe for us to go in there with you? I mean, there's caskets. You guys look pretty big. Everybody died laughing. Now, die laughing, that's a terrible pun. But. So we had a great time, and they said, here's our challenge. Our sales reps, they go into these mom-and-pop funeral homes. Right? You've seen them in the small towns. They got three names. They've been there for 50, 60, 70 years. And they said, we go in and we sell them. But the problem is that our industry is very, very locked in to loyalty. And so we'll go in and say, hey, we've got a great casket. And they'll say, you know, I know you got a great casket. You guys got a great reputation. But my great-grandfather bought from your competitor. My grandfather bought from your competitor. My father bought from your competitor. And now I am doing business with the son of the competitor. And we just, you know, we're going to stay where we are. What do we do? Anybody ever faced a question like that? Now, I want you to put your leadership hat on. I want you to be thinking about this as a business owner. This is a sales objection, but I want you to think about in your business, what's your why? And what is the why of the people that you serve? And so what should we do? And it was about time for lunch. And I said, well, why don't we get back on that after lunch? So we go out, and I said, I got to make a phone call. So I did something pretty cool. I had my phone as Zig card. Anybody got one of those? So I called Dad. Hey, Dad, here's the situation. Went through it. He said, son, they're asking the wrong question. I said, Dad, what's the question? He said, when you walk in, you don't go in and say, do you want to buy a casket? You go in and you ask, why are you in business? Now, see, we have worked with funeral home owners and directors, and we know this in these small towns where it's generational. They will say, I'm in business because there is no greater privilege and honor than to walk with our family and friends and neighbors in their greatest time of need. I've buried my best friend's mom. We had a tragedy of a car accident a number of years ago when we rallied the community for support. There is no greater love that we can show than in the job that we do. Right? Is that a pretty big why? So we go back to the meeting, and I just wanted to make sure that we were on the same page, and I asked the eight Italians, I said, hey, when your people call on one of these mom-and-pop funeral homes, and you guys have made those calls, they're like, oh yeah, we've been out to hundreds of them. Why are they in business? What's the why behind the why? And they all said the same thing. Their family sees it as a mission. Because think about it. I mean, how many of you woke up and said, you know what, I want to have a funeral home. Anybody here with that? No, it's a tough business, and you really have to have that heart to get into that business. So they said that. They said they do it because they feel like it's their ministry in so many cases. And so I said, why don't you look at it this way? Instead of saying, do you want to buy our casket, ask them why they want to go into business, and just ask them why several times, and they'll tell you that. And then ask them this question. Would you be open to me showing you some things that would help you serve your customer better than what you're using right now? Would you be open to showing you how you can serve your customer better? Who's going to say no to that? And so what's happened in this last year of disruption is the misplaced loyalty, the loyalty that doesn't serve our customer, but it's just really convenient because we've always done it that way, that's been thrown up in the air and challenged. So I want you to think as an owner running your business, what's the why for your people? What's the why for your customer? And how can you serve them differently? How can you take that to the next level? And then there's the Denny's story. This is the first time I really understood that we have a moral obligation to sell our product or service. Dad had been speaking all night. We hadn't had dinner. I was 26 or 27. Dad said, on the way back to the hotel, you want to stop and get something to eat? What do you think a 27-year-old who hasn't eaten dinner would? Plus, at the Ziegler household, we have a saying, we don't eat until we're full, we eat until we're tired. Right? Anybody with me on that? So we go to Denny's, we sit down, and it's about 11 o'clock at night, Friday night, and this lady comes in. She takes her drink order, nice older lady, probably close to 70. She walks off, and Dad says, oh, what a shame. I said, Dad, I don't understand. And he said, oh, what a shame. An insurance man didn't do his job. I said, Dad, I don't understand. He said, son, she's probably about 70. Do you think she wants to be working at Denny's at 11 o'clock on Friday night? She's here because she has to be here. And I can almost guarantee you 30 or 40 years ago, she sat down at a kitchen table with her husband and an insurance man said, hey, I've got a solution for you. And they didn't make the sale. So what's the why behind your business and how life-changing is what you do to those you serve? AC, when you serve your customers, people to go out and represent something. Does it change their life?
Absolutely.
It changes their life. Your employees, the people on your team, when you're able to build a profitable business and they're a part of that profitability and you reward them, does it change their life? Does it allow them to do the things? Yes.
Santiago, I was listening to a class of Santiago taught at Softwalk and he goes into the origins of the word sale. Now it actually goes back to the word service. We talked about that if you're a good salesperson, you're actually serving people. And that you have to be convicted and passionate about what you sell, and also a little pushy sometimes, because you know your product is going to change their life. And as I stumbled across the class, and I was listening to it as I was cleaning one of our offices, and I was just like, man, Santiago, boom.
Boom. That's right. Sale and service. Santiago, what route is he? Santiago here?
Right here.
What route was that? Sale to service.
What's to
that?
Serve, yeah.
To serve. What was it? Latin or was it?
It's actually Brian Flanagan, who I heard it from.
Ah.
You see the circle?
Oh, Brian. Because in Hebrew, there's a word for sale, and it means to anticipate a problem before they have it.
Hmm.
And so in this time of disruption, challenge, and change, your mission, what you do, the product or service that you offer, it is something that is life-changing. And if you don't make the sale, right, not only the sweet lady at Denny's, because she was the customer and she didn't get it, but if you don't make enough sales, the people on your team, they're going to hunt for positions somewhere else. And they're probably not going to work in an environment that cares about them as a human being, as a whole person, as some you. How many of you want your people to win in every area of life? All right, we're going to talk about that. So let's get into it. So when we talk about opportunity in this time of disruption, where is opportunity found? Opportunity is found in the embrace of disruption, mindset, and atmosphere. And I have another word for disruption. I think of it as challenge and change. And I have another word for challenge and change. I call it opportunity. So I just want to hear out loud, just yell it out. What are, in your mind, what are the top business challenges that leaders face today, that business faces today? Just shout it out.
Labor.
Labor? Yeah. Labor. Cash flow? What else?
New technology.
New technology. Anybody else?
Profit.
Profit? Yeah. What else? From a leadership perspective.
Integrity.
Integrity.
Developing leadership.
Yeah. Training the next generation. Developing, growing. So in my research over the last year, these are the top 10. Businesses in general, this is what they're facing. The two there on the left, mental health and well-being of my people and work-life balance, these have suddenly risen to the top of the challenges. How many of you agree with that? Do you agree with it?
I had two employees, Brett Bernard, that had an agent set in and quit leaving the office every day. I guess I'm leaving the office. Within the first month, I had two that called in for mental health reasons, and it was surprising to me, but it made sense because it was that connection that you're talking about. And then now there's not that regular connection with the group, and they had to deal with that.
It's everywhere. And we see it in the news, the depression rates. And so what happens when you feel a little bit depressed? You self-medicate. For me, it's cheesecake. Anybody got that? And so we heard about it at the beginning of the pandemic. Hey, you know, people are home, they're binging on Netflix, they're drinking too much, they're doing drugs, they're gaining weight, they're in the car, all this stuff. And what does that do? It doesn't make things better. No, it makes things worse. And so as a business owner, we've got to understand that, look, if I'm not communicating to everybody, and if we got some working remote, some working in the office, or, you know, there's this different tension, right? We've got to go above and beyond to communicate. I'm not going to go through every one of these challenges because we could spend a day on each one of these. But look, productivity, performance, that's a key issue. I wanted to point out stigma and jealousy. Anybody seen this in the work environment? Has it escalated? Does anybody say, hey, how come they get to work from home and I don't? How come they get that and I don't? Right, these things escalate. Why do they escalate? We're gonna get into that. So here's the 50,000 foot view. Remember I said that opportunity is found in the embrace of disruption, mindset, and atmosphere. So let's get into it. Let's look at disruption.
Chris.
There might be somebody who clicked in the Zoom. There we go. So what are the disruptions that have happened? What are things that have changed in the last year? Supply chain, it's crazy, isn't it? How much delay? 6 months, unknown?
Severe indecision.
People don't want to work. Communication's kind of odd, isn't it? How many of you have somebody on your team and their spouse has been laid off or unemployed and is going through a hard time? You got to deal with that, don't you? Everything's changed. So what about the future change? What's the disruption that's coming? I want you to write down a word. The word is called convergence. Technology is converging. So what is convergence? Convergence is when different types of technology come together to make a massive change, a massive shift in the way that we see and do business. Did anybody here see about or hear about the new Cadillac flying car? Anybody? Because we told you about it on Tuesday. So how does the car fly? Well, it flies because AI, artificial intelligence, is going to be the pilot. Because I'm not going to pilot school. I might want the flying car, but I'm not going to pilot school. Anybody with me? Mm-hmm. That'd be a mistake for me and for everybody else. 5G or 6G is going to have to connect that car and the AI as it flies through the air so it doesn't hit a building or something else moving. Right? Then you got to have super fast computing, like quantum computing or supercomputing, that processes everything so that it will fly. Then there's battery technology that drive each one of the propellers on the drone, right? Because it's really a flying drone is what it is. And it's got to be light, right? The battery can't weigh too much. It's got to have enough energy to store. And the cool thing is that if one of those batteries goes down, it's okay because there's multiple rotors and they will still fly the plane. Well, that's called convergence. Artificial intelligence, virtual reality, augmented reality. Now, what about regular business? In a few years, when we get on a Zoom call, it's going to be on the back of our glasses. Y'all seen that? And it's going to be in an augmented reality or virtual reality atmosphere, and our brain won't know that we're not in the room with them. So if your brain doesn't know that you're not actually having coffee side by side, what does that change? 20% of Apple's revenue is from wearable devices. You know, those little smart watches. What are those devices really? They're really medical devices, aren't they? So what about this? 5 years from now, you're working from home because you've converted your garage into a home office because you now have a car subscription because you don't need to own a car full time because it's driverless. It just shows up. Basically, I'm driving my car. Blue. Yeah, so your car shows up, so you convert your garage into a home office and gym. You got your wearable device on, and you get this calls coming in, so you click your glasses, and it's your healthcare provider, and they're like, hey, we noticed something a little off. Could you go to the front door? And you open the front door, and there's a drone there, and it has a little medical test. And so you do the test, and you put it back in the drone and takes it back. The doctor calls you back 45 minutes later and says, yeah, you're coming down with something. You won't feel any symptoms for a day or two, but here's the medication that will prevent you from ever feeling the symptoms. Are y'all excited about that?
No.
I'm just telling you the disruption's coming, and that's going to create all kinds of problems. And what do problems mean?
Opportunity.
And so how does that impact what I do on a daily basis? It all comes down to this. It comes down to mindset. Oh, because the disruption challenges changes here. It's how I look at it. Remember what Dad said? Do I react or respond? React is negative. Respond is positive. So I read this book called The Black Swan. And in that book, it talked about when Castro took over Cuba and the people left. They showed up in Miami and Florida. And many of them did not unpack their suitcases for 10 years. Why is that? They were going to go back. They were waiting for the call. You see, in their mind, they wanted it to go back to the way it was, and they froze their life. They left their suitcase packed, and the call never came. So I'm telling that story to a lady named Berta, who's an executive coach. And she said, I'm one of those people. When I was a little girl, my family left Cuba because of Castro. When we got to our house, the first month that we were there, my mom took the hallway closet and she said, this is the Cuba closet. And she went out and bought a brand new set of china. And she put the china in the closet and she told the family, don't touch it. This is for when we go back to Cuba. And over the years, the closet kept getting added to. And then she said, mom died. And the family got together in the house, and we emptied the closet, and we decided to use it now. Each and every person in here, you've got treasure buried in your heart, in your soul. You've got gifts and talents that God has given you that you need to develop, and you need to pull out of the closet and use. And your people are in that same situation. And what happens in a time of disruption is we want it to go back to the way it was. And somebody said, The supply chain issue was indecision, right? They're not making decisions right now. Now is the time to make decisions, to invest in myself, invest in my people, seek out the opportunity, ask the hard questions. A good friend of Ziegler, his name was Larry Carpenter. At the time, he owned the Holiday Inn Presidential in Little Rock. And when the mortgage crisis happened in 2008-2009, remember that? It's not like this doesn't happen, right? Was anybody affected by that? I'm just curious. Yeah. Southwest Airlines was one of his biggest clients. I think they were taking 40 rooms a night for flight crews. Big contract. What happened to airline travel after that? Just stopped, didn't it? So you know what Larry did? He wrote a letter and called them right at the beginning and said, hey, I know you guys are going through a tough time. What can we do to sharpen the pencil to help? Southwest Airlines voted, the flight crews voted his hotel 3 times the best hotel in the country to stay in as a flight crew. His contract came back bigger than it was. Why? Because he looked at disruption as an opportunity to cement a relationship on principles and values of trust and caring that matter. And so when the Cuba closet raises its head, we've got to go the opposite direction. We've got to say, no, wait a second. This is fantastic. This is what we do. This is how we grow. This is how we make the difference. We create the future that we see. What is the future that you're creating for the people on your team? Do they know the mission statement backwards and forwards? And when you say, why do we do what we do? Do they say, so we can make money? Well, that's great. So we can make profit? That's awesome. So that people can make a memory in their home? Think about it. What's the why behind the why behind the why? We create that future. And if you're not creating a future for them, guess what they're going to fill their head with? What's on social media, what's on the news, what their friends are telling, everything else.
Christian.
There we go. Hope. Our people need hope. Without hope, why bother? Anybody notice a little state of hopelessness in this last year? Yeah. They need hope. They need to find it from you. They need to find it. And this is what's amazing, is that the future that we see determines the way we think. Is it positive or is it negative? Our thinking, look at this, our thinking determines our performance. Do y'all agree? 100%, right? 100%. The thinking determines the performance. Our performance then determines what? The future. The number one lesson I learned from Dad. You are what you are and where you are because of what's gone into your mind. You can change what you are. You can change where you are by changing what goes into your mind. How many of you believe this, that you might be, as an owner, as a leader in your business, that you might be the only source of good news that somebody on your team gets? Mm-hmm. Y'all agree with that? So your business has a why. It changes lives. It provides for families. And the only source of good news that some of your people have is you. Wow. What an opportunity. I mean, someday we all get to stand in front of our Creator. You know, Bob Bodine had this question. And I love the question. What have you done with the people God put in front of you? What have you done with the people God's put in front of you? Hey, you should get motivated. You should listen. You should read. You should listen, you know, do audio. If your people hear, I would say, you need to ask your leader, what's the last book they read? What's the last program they listened to? How often? When? How much? It starts with us. And all of that allows us to create the atmosphere. What is atmosphere? Well, for me, it's much more than culture. It's much more than environment. It's much more than the things that were around, because atmosphere is spiritual. How many of you have been on a Zoom call in the last year where you got excited and fired up? It's possible, isn't it? Yeah, it is. What's the odd? On ours, yeah. The rest of them out there, well, don't waste your time. And so how does that happen? You're not in the same place. It's a spiritual connection. I was in Singapore speaking on the top of a 55-story tower. Everybody in the room was making a lot of money. The atmosphere was dead. Everybody in that room knew that they were a unit of production, and if they didn't produce, there'd be somebody else elbowing their way in for that seat. I was in a manufacturing facility in Youngstown, Ohio. We go in, and it is a true manufacturing facility. I mean, safety gear, and there's stuff around, and it's hot, and it's dangerous, and all that stuff. These people, the atmosphere was through the roof. Why? Because they loved each other. If somebody got sick, everybody brought food. You know what I mean? It's just, the atmosphere is up to you as a leader. You've got to create the atmosphere. What is the perfect atmosphere for you and what you want to do? Because here's the reality. In times of disruption, this is what's going on in the people's heads. Might be even going on in yours. So if that's what we don't want, what do we want? Our people want to be respected. They want to be heard. I mean, there's three things. And if you have meetings in face-to-face, gosh, that is awesome. Okay, here's a side note. A little bit of research. There's going to be three types of businesses going forward. There's going to be headquarters only. These are the businesses that only operate in person. Then there's going to be remote only. My son-in-law worked for a remote only company, right? And they only meet virtually. And then there's the hybrid. And the hybrid has the biggest risk and the biggest opportunity. And hybrid is either some will work remote, some will work in the office, and some will come in a couple of days a week. Anybody familiar with those three? So why is hybrid the biggest risk? Pardon? Jealousy? Yep, that's part of it. What else?
Miles of future repeating itself.
Okay. So from a leadership perspective, what's the danger of a hybrid workforce? They lose touch with their counterparts. I want you to hear this word. We hear it a lot. It's called bias. So bias simply means you're predisposed to believe in something, and you often will reject information from the other side because it doesn't match up with what you already believe. Does that make sense? So a leader who's biased towards people who come into the office will, through communication, body language, policies, and procedures, tend to ignore his performers, her people, his people that are working primarily remotely. Now, here's something else. A top performer today can work for any company anywhere in the world. Y'all agree? Do top performers like to be ignored? So how do we make people feel respected and included? There's three things. Number one, they got to be included. So if you're having a dispersed team and they're in different locations, you got to go the extra mile to make sure they're all in all the meetings. They're being invited. They're part of it. Because it doesn't take long before they feel left out. And if they feel left out, nobody cares. And if nobody cares, then I can make any decision I want. Has anybody had somebody from your team poached by a competitor? Nobody? Nobody's had somebody hired away recently? A few? A few? Yeah. If you're talking to them every day and loving on them and know what their problems and challenges are, that the odds of that going down, I mean, that happening goes way down. So number one, they've got to be included. Number two, they got to be heard. So when you're having a meeting and everybody's pitching in, how many of you know that the two or three people out of 10 will dominate the conversation? Everybody's laughing. So how do you get them heard? What's that? The pod. Yeah, the pod strategy is fantastic. Another simple strategy is you just write down everybody's name in the meeting on a sheet of paper, and every time somebody says something, you put a check mark by it. And about halfway through the meeting, the people who don't have check marks, you just start asking them questions. Right? That's a simple way. So they've got to be included, they've got to be heard, and they got to be safe. What does safe mean? I'm just curious, what do you think safe means? They got to feel safe.
You don't feel like you're playing gotcha.
You're not playing gotcha, absolutely, 100%. They feel secure in their future. If you ask somebody, why don't you share about what you think, what are they likely to say? You'll retaliate against them? Yeah, you got to have their back. So safe means that somebody can share a question like, I don't know, or tell that to me again, or I have a crazy idea. And not only will the leader reinforce that, hey, that's awesome, but here's the answer, but they will also shut down anybody else who rolls their eyes, cuts them off, says that's dumb. That's never happened at your company, but it happens out there, right? So why is this important? Why, you know, are your people depressed? How many of you know that you've had somebody on your team depressed? We talked about it earlier, right? So Rabbi Lapin says this. He says, I love this. The opposite of depression is not happiness. The opposite of depression is purpose. The opposite of depression is purpose. So you're sitting here, golly, why didn't we start off with the casket story? Because your people need to know your purpose. If we're on the road to purpose, happiness is a byproduct. Happiness just falls off. And unfortunately, you know, we say in our coaching program, we say that coaching is a transference of confidence. Right? When you coach somebody to the next level, what you're really doing is you're giving them confidence they don't have yet. Right? How many of you have had people say to you, you can do more than you think you can? And that was what gave you the little nudge, the little extra energy to go do it, right? I have. Just an amazing concept. Well, guess what? Some people, the only purpose they have because their life is such a wreck is coming into work and borrowing some of your purpose. Y'all agree?
Yeah.
Wow. Would you make your purpose, your mission so clear? And they can buy into that cause, right? They can get excited about making a difference. Then it changes everything. Our culture lies. Our culture says happiness is a feeling. Our culture says if it feels good, do it. Our culture says, hey, you know, your own personal truth, whatever you believe in, if that's what you believe in, that's what you need to go for. Because at the end of the day, it's all about you being happy. The problem with happiness is when disruption comes, you try to discover your happiness in cheesecake, Netflix, alcohol, and drugs. Because that's just what happened, isn't it? So on an individual level, what is our purpose? How do we find happiness? Happiness is being and becoming the person God created us to become. In other words, we step into our purpose. We make a difference, and we serve others. That's what we do. So that was the 50,000-foot view. Now we're going to drop it down to the 10,000-foot view. And so these are actionable things that you can do, that you can start implementing. And the goal is top performance. That's what we want. How many of you want top performance from your team? Yeah, of course we do. So how do we get top performance? Top performance is found at the intersection of coach leadership, quality of life, and asynchronous vulnerability. So how many of you have ever attended an event where they talked about asynchronous vulnerability? We're going to get there. What if I told you that asynchronous vulnerability is the most important thing you can create to have a successful top-performing team? How many of you would get excited about knowing what that means then? Yeah, you would. Davey, I like it. So let's go through this. We're going to start with coach leadership. How many of you believe that leadership has changed? Has it changed? What's changed about leadership?
You just don't tell people what to do anymore. They just do it. They want to have the buy-in on it now. They want more knowledge about it. Why you doing this?
The why behind the why?
Based on reciprocity.
What else has changed about leadership? Does it seem more mystical than it used to be? I mean, Forbes like do that. Why? Because I said so. Right? That doesn't work anymore. It's not the way the millennials were raised. It's not fear-based. It's spiritually oriented. Now let me just ask this. Does a top performer, do they like to be told what to do, or do they like to be asked, how do you think the best way to do this is? How many of you prefer to be asked? I'm just curious. So in the book, Post-Corona by Scott Galloway, he said this. He said that every trend that was in place before the pandemic got accelerated by 10 years. Okay, y'all agree with that? Telemedicine. How many of you used a doctor's appointment prior to the pandemic on a Zoom call or something similar? Anybody here? A couple. How many of you since have been on? How many of you are wondering how come it took so long for us to get on a Zoom call to go to the doctor for your annual sinus infection? It takes 4 hours in your day when you can do it the same thing in 10 minutes, right? We had the technology, the healthcare was there, but you know what? The doctors were biased against it, the healthcare systems were biased against it, and the patients were biased against it. Now when we don't have any other choice, we discover, wow, this is really great. I don't have to spend 4 hours around sick people to get an antibiotic for my now infected sinuses because of an allergy. So much has changed. So in coach leadership, we like to be asked. So what are the key components here? The old style, top down, do it because I said so, command and control leader, the one that was on its way out anyway, okay, it got accelerated by 10 years. And what's replaced it? The coach leader, who's seen as a guy who co-creates. So when you ask a top performer, hey, how would you get this done? And they give you their ideas. What if you, as the owner, the leader, what if you learn something new and you're like, wow, that's a really good idea? And it actually lifts your game because you're asking that question to somebody on their team. But you've been doing it a lot longer, so they don't know everything. And so you're like, that's great. How about, what do you think about adding this in or doing this or changing that sequence? You see how that's a co-creation of a solution? It's a lot different impact. Two-way communication that's focused on engagement. But I really want to focus on the last line for both sides. Old school, top-down, command and control businesses and leaders are about results. Hey, this is your quota. This is what we do on a service call. You got to follow the form, right? Measurable, quantifiable results. This is what we do. In the book, The Black Swan, we're studying past pandemic or black swan events like a pandemic. What they discovered is that businesses that were locked into a five-year tactical plan, strategic plan, were the ones that were most likely to do the worst when something like a pandemic happens. Why? Because the environment completely changes and the way you did business in the past doesn't work anymore. You have a beautiful sit-down restaurant in Manhattan. What happens? Doesn't work. You got to figure out another way. If you're results-oriented only, what happens is you continue to do the thing that's not working longer than you should. If you're growth-oriented, you are perfectly prepared for disruption, challenge, and change. If your focus is on how much your people grow in every experience, along with getting results, because we're not throwing results out, we're just putting the emphasis on growth, then innovation, collaboration, and creativity come. Does this make sense? How can we help our people grow? You're the coach leader. You're leading through asking questions, collaboration, creating engagement, communication. How do you help your people grow?
I just got to read this book. How do you read this book? Tell me about what you think about chapter 3 or something like that.
Perfect. Perfect. Yes.
You can also help them feel empowered to make decisions and then analyze the results of those decisions. So maybe what's the best one that you empowered to be able to make it. And so even if it didn't go right, they learned from it. And that way they're not always going to come to you for every time there's a decision. They feel empowered to make it, learn from it, grow from it.
Absolutely. So a great way to do that is your team. Over and over and over again. Here's our mission. Here are our core values. You're empowered to go make a decision. You're right there with the client, the customer, the challenge, the problem, the opportunity, whatever it is. As long as your decision can be backed up by our core values to support our mission, go for it.
It has to feel psychologically safe to be creative in their problem solving.
Perfect. That's right. They make the decision and doesn't go according to plan. They need to be congratulated for the decision, for willing to step out there and do it. Let's look how we can do it in a different way or a better way next time. I love what you did. Right. And that should be celebrated. The two most important leadership qualities is I had breakfast with Dr. Ken Blanchard a few years ago. He says, Tom, do you know what the two most important qualities are of a leader? I said, no. He said, humility and confidence, because they don't make sense to me. How do you have both? And I said, you're right. He goes, look at it this way. And he said, you're a Christian, I'm a Christian. He says, as a Christian, we know that we have the humility that says there's nothing I can do without Christ. And the confidence to know there's nothing I can't do with Christ. I'm here to tell you that the void in our leadership at every level, whether it's government, whether it's business, whether it's in the community, whether it's in the home, is we either get leaders that are so confident they're arrogant and they got no humility, they're not willing to take any feedback. They're not willing to grow. They're not willing to listen to anything that somebody brings to the table. Or they're so humble that they will not position themselves next to the stage where they get asked the important questions. You see the difference in those two? I mean, that is the challenge. And so we've got to be humble as our lead. You know, we've got to, when we screw up, we've got to admit to the team, we screwed up. When we do something that has a consequence that we didn't expect, our team needs to have the psychological safety, the asynchronous vulnerability, to come to the leader and say, hey, help me understand why you did this, because I don't know if you know this, but this, this, and this happened. And the leader's got to go, oh, my gosh. I mean, Howard makes a decision every day where he has to say, oh, my gosh, I have no idea.
I missed that. By the way, I'm looking up synonyms for
asynchronous. So I have this quote. The quote is, a tree's fruitfulness depends on its rootfulness. The fruit of the tree depends on the root of the tree. So how do we nourish the root? So if we want to be the right kind of coach leader, if we want to be the right leader for our organization, then it needs to be automatic. The fruit that we bear needs to just be from just a position of, this is just who we are. And so in all my research, these are the 10 virtues that you need to develop. If you embody these virtues in all your relationships, then you're going to create an atmosphere that people want to be around. You're going to create a growth-oriented focus of the people on your team. You're going to create an environment that allows them to say, hey, I don't understand. Now, this is a full day, so we're not going there, because we got, thanks for giving me until lunch. I appreciate that.
Why don't you tell them how to be turnkey in three?
Talk to Howard. See, we solved that problem. So let me so look at these. Be kind. Practice self-control. How many of you have lost a year's worth of ground because your self-control got out of control one day? Yeah. Being kind, just talking to somebody out of kindness, even though you disagree, even though they messed up, being kind in that conversation. So here's a story. So Mahango from Wailo, she's from Darwin, Australia. She's one of our trainers. And so she came through our ZLC, and in her talk at the end of graduation, she told her story. She was crying, you know, she started with tears, and then she said, this is what happened to me. She was working for a company. She was voted the MVE, most valuable employee, from her peers. She loved this job. And they had a new job opening, and it was to be the internal corporate trainer. And so she applied for that job. They told her it would be like 3 months before she knew. Her whole team and her department got together for a meeting. The managing director was there, and they were strategizing the plans for the year. What do we need to do to hit our numbers to get these projects out, so on and so forth. At the end of the meeting, Mahango raised her hand, and she says, hey, everybody, I want you to know, you probably already know, I've applied for this trainer position. I'm not going to know for 3 months, but if anybody in this room needs some education or information on technical skills or professional skills or soft skills, I will do the research and I'll come back in because I love this. This is what I want to do. I will do this on my own time for the team because I want us to hit these numbers. That's a pretty good team member, isn't it? The managing director stands up, points at her, and says, Mahango, you will never train our people. You don't have the charisma, you don't have the talent, you don't have the skill, you don't have the experience. You can just forget that. That's not happening. Happens. Well, Hongo says, I don't know what to do. She said, I didn't know whether to walk out of the meeting or sit down and be quiet or turn in my resignation. So she goes, she just sits down, the meeting's over, she goes back to the office, she closes, she prays, she thanks. You know, she decided right now, if I stay, I'm not going to do any answer. She goes home. She'd gotten some information from us. She's like, that's what I want to do. She comes to Dallas. She tells that story. Now she's got a successful training and consulting business. She won number two in Toastmaster, trains all over the world. But then she called me 2 years ago and said, you're not going to believe this. Well, I got to go out to Australia and speak for her group, right? So that's kind of good. So that was about 5 years ago. So 2 years ago, she calls and says, Tom, you're not going to believe this. I just got this email. Look at it. So down below, she copied the email. It was from the company that she left. And they said, hey, we heard you're a really good trainer, and you used to work here, and our people loved you. Would you be willing to come talk to us about doing some training for our people? How did that happen? Self-control. Kindness. She was the bigger person. She had those virtues already in her. She was leading in not a leadership position. And because she demonstrated those virtues, they want her to come back and lead them as an outside expert. If you want to take a quick picture of everything side by side. So as a coach leader, we develop those virtues inside of ourselves. That's what we do. All right, going, going, going. We're changing it. We're changing it. We're changing the picture. That should be like an audio program. Okay, Zig fans, that's not in the title of one of the audio programs. Quality of life. So as a coach leader, I've got to be focused on the quality of life of my people. Remember the top two things, the health and well-being of my people and work-life balance. Dad said in the 70s and 80s, if standard of living is your goal, your quality of life will almost never go up. If quality of life is your goal, your standard of living almost always goes up. Does that make sense? From the people that you associate with, is quality of life a bigger and more important concern than it was in the past? It's huge, right? We all went home and spent more time with our families, and for most of us, it was like, that was a good thing, right? We like that. We like the flexibility. We like having a little bit more flexibility in the day. Quality of life equals quality of work. How is the quality of life of your people? What are they thinking? What are they feeling? How's their health? How are their relationships? Years ago, we did a project at a hospital, and Dr. Bob was there. He was the chaplain and the doctor at the hospital. He taught it, and he gets on the elevator, and there's Johnny. Johnny's the janitor. Johnny's just whistling like crazy, smiling and whistling. And Dr. Bob says, Johnny, why are you smiling and whistling? Why are you so happy? He said, Dr. Bob, I bought a house, and I'm closing it on Friday, and it's all your fault. And Dr. Bob said, I don't know what you mean. He said, oh, yeah. He said, 3 weeks ago, you took us through goal setting as a team. And we were working on the 7 steps of goal setting, and that was awesome. And you asked us, what's a big goal we want that we haven't gone for? And he said, Dr. Bob, I worked here 20 years. This is like family to me. He said, I decided I wanted a house. Nobody in my family's ever owned a house. I didn't know how to get a house. So I set a goal to get a house. And he said, everything I needed I had except for I didn't know who to talk to. And the guy next to me, he owns a house. So he put me in charge or in touch with the bank that could do that. So I went down there. They said, do you have employment history? Yes. Do you have any debt? No. Do you have enough for down payment? Yes. Dr. Bob, I'm buying a house on Friday. It's all your fault. Because at work, they said, what goal do you have? What's your dream? What's your purpose? What would be meaningful and important to you? And then he says, Dr. Bob, it's closer to the office. It's much bigger, much nicer, and it's less than I was paying in rent. Has his relationship changed with the place he worked? What's the quality of life of your people? And Choose to Win, we talk about the 7 spokes. So this is real simple. We need to ask questions. Hey, how's your family? Hey, I know you went through a real tough time. You lost your grandfather. How's that? How are you doing? You open those doors, you'll be amazed at what people will tell you. But you can't do it all at once. If you've hired them 36 hours ago, you know, you don't want to go in and say, yeah, do you go to church? Right. You see what I'm saying? We live it out. We build the relationship. We do these things first. Those are the areas. If your people are 8s, 9s, and 10s in all 7 of these areas, what's going to happen to their performance? It's going to go up. It can't help it. Asynchronous vulnerability.
Okay, so.
I love this.
7:30. So he did not stay there. He hasn't been sleeping there with them. He was basically trying to empty. He was just emptying the trash. That's what I'm saying. Miss
Brown
Yola was telling me. She said, "Well, he was just coming and he would leave and empty the trash."
They're vulnerable.
What does that mean? So that's an issue.
If someone on your team doesn't understand.
So it
is a little bit confused. Has a crazy idea. They know that it's a safe place to say, hey, I don't understand. Help me out here. How do you create a vulnerable team? It starts with the leader. The leader needs to share, hey, I made a bad decision over here. You know what? We went this direction for 60 days. It's not working. This one's on me. Right? Somebody who's on your team, they're out in the field and something goes wrong because you didn't communicate to them. They come back to work, they're getting chewed out by the customer, by their supervisor, and it comes to you, a vulnerable leader who demonstrates this, says, wait a second, this is not Bubba's fault. This is my fault. I made this decision and I didn't communicate it. When the leader does that, that gives permission to the rest of the team to be vulnerable. That's vulnerability. Asynchronous is just a buzzword right now, and I'm using it because everybody's like on the edge of their seat. What does asynchronous mean? Well, in the buzzword vernacular, it means that people are working in different time zones in different places on the same project, and they're putting that work into documents like Slack documents and Google Docs. And it's very disconcerting for leadership because in the past, our bias has been, hey, I know when you're working when you're on the clock. I know when you're working because you're in your seat. And so this new way of working where we can work from anywhere, we don't have to come to the office first, we can just leave from our house. What are they doing between A and B? So that's asynchronous. So the ultimate is when people are willing to be vulnerable in an asynchronous environment, when they're willing to put on a document, I don't understand. It's hard enough to create vulnerability when people get around a small table and we know each other and we have coffee and we talk about soccer practice on the weekend, blah, blah, blah. Do you know how hard it is when the team is separated by time and distance, time zones, locations? So here are a couple of ways to look at it. Trust not dependent on time or space. So what is asynchronous vulnerability? It's really trust. That's what it is. But it doesn't matter on time or space. It doesn't matter on where or when. And there's another word. I mean, when you look at that, trust not dependent on time or space, what is that? That is faith. That is faith. Isn't it amazing? The reason I'm so excited about where we are and all this disruption is we are in a crisis of faith. If your people don't have the faith that you've got their back, that you're going to stand up for them, that you're not going to let somebody else take advantage of them, that if they don't have that faith, guess what they're going to do? They're going to shut down. They're not going to say anything. And in times of rapid change and disruption, if your people are not bringing to you the challenges that they're facing, you're getting further and further and further and further behind the competition who everybody is bringing it forward immediately. Hey, I don't think this is going to work anymore. I've seen this happen 3 times in the last week. We need to recognize we might have to change something. Faith. So I'm going to close with the Dabo Swinney story. How many of you know who Dabo Swinney is? Yeah. How many of you have heard the chair story, the Dabo Swinney? Anybody heard the chair story? So this is a number of years ago. They were predicted to win the national championship. They were the favorite, and they didn't win. And it was a devastating thing, because I think it was before they won their first recent national championship. And so they're back in practice, and they've got the players, and the players are disintegrating into cliques. Anybody ever seen that happen in the workplace? There's a little infighting going on, and, you know, when you have a Division I college football team and you have recruits from around the country, they come out of different heritages, different backgrounds, different circumstances. And Dabo looks up and he goes, wow, we got a challenge. Now, is the head coach, is their job to coach the players or the other coaches? It's the coaches, right? Now, the head coach is responsible for the inspiration, the motivation, the morale of the team, and the overall making sure everything's running together. But a great head coach, they're poured into their assistant coaches in conjunction with what's going on the field, right? So Dabo brings his coaching staff together and says, we're going to do the chair because our team's falling apart. We're the best team in the country. I believe it's our destiny to win the national championship. But if we're not playing as a team, we're not going to win. So at the end of practice, the whole team gets on the ground and they put one chair in the middle. And they ask a player to sit in that chair. And then they start asking questions. Where'd you grow up? When did you know you wanted to be a football player? What's the biggest challenge you had? What drives you crazy? And these kids, they'd say, yeah, my dad died when I was 3. My mom's in prison. I was recruited by a gang when I was barely in junior high, but luckily a coach saw my potential. And all of a sudden, every player on the team said, that is a human being who's gone through things I can't even imagine. Maybe they get upset when a word's said. Maybe they get upset when something happens. I would too. So you see what he did? Is he created a chair where people could say, this is who I am. And guess what happened that year? They won. But you see, you can't create that atmosphere unless you've got those virtues oozing out of you. And you can't create that atmosphere unless you're intentional about being a coach leader. And you can't create that atmosphere unless you guard and protect that safe space, that asynchronous vulnerability. When you do those things and your team is focused on growth, bring on the problems, bring on the challenges, bring on the disruption. My name is Colin Ziegler. I am the proud son of Zig Ziegler. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for your time.